Hey everyone, welcome to the Balanced Dietitian podcast. I am your host, Marie-Pierre, and for all my English friends out there, you can call me Marie. I am a registered dietitian with a background in psychology. My passion in life is to help individuals heal their relationship with food and their bodies. If you're tired of dieting and tired of restriction, you are at the right place. I'm hoping that this podcast will help and support you as you heal your own relationship with food and your body, and give you the tools, the resources, and the knowledge that you need to finally ditch the diets. Every week, you will be hearing from guest experts and myself on all things food, body, and mind. I am so happy that you're here, and I cannot wait to support you on your journey. Let's get started. Hey everybody, welcome to the Balanced Dietitian podcast. Thank you so much for being here with me today. I am so excited to talk to you about our guest today. Today we are welcoming Brianna Campos, who is a body image therapist. Brianna is such a ray of sunshine. She does so much good for this world, and I'm so honored to share her genius with you. So I met Brianna, I think off Instagram. and Brianna is now one of our guest experts that come in our online program to help our participants with their body image. Honestly, I can't say enough great things about Brianna. She has an amazing story. She's an amazing person, and the work she does is so needed. In this podcast episode, we talk about body grief. If body image is something that you struggle with, you will love this episode. So I hope you enjoy, my friends, and I'll see you on the other side. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Balanced Dietitian podcast. Today, we have an amazing guest. I'm so excited to have her on. So we are welcoming Brianna Campos. Hi, Brianna.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
I am so happy that you're here. We met back, I think it's a few months ago now, and you've been presenting in my group, and I love everything about you. Oh, I'm a fan.
So the feeling is mutual.
I'm so happy that you're here today, and let's start with just talking for people who may not know you of who you are, what you do, and what got you to where you are today.
Absolutely. So I say my name is Brianna, but my friends get to call me Bri. I am a licensed mental health counselor in the state of New Jersey, but I do body image coaching.
I love that. We don't hear that often, eh?
No. And I'm actually taking a little shift in my career as well. And I am finding great joy in also psychoeducating professionals, because I think that the conversation on body image has been muted merely because people have not explored their own difficulty with body image. And so we often say body image is the last piece to come, or that's not within my scope. And so we don't touch it. And then we see our clients reach a level of quote unquote success. And then there's a wall and a barrier. And I was like, I think I could help these professionals push past that wall. So, yeah.
I love that so much. There's something that I've heard a while back that I love is like, we have two relationships in our life that we can't break up with, food and our body. So I'm like, both of them so need to work together, because we live in our body and we need food. So we need to work on these things just to feel more at peace and better.
Yeah. I think even with the relationship with our food, it's inanimate, right? So like, food doesn't love you back. Whereas I actually believe our bodies do, right? Our bodies love us, and that's why they communicate with us so deeply. And things that maybe we would have in another time seen as something bad or as our body failing, is actually our body communicating to us. Right? That when we are sick, and, you know, I was just talking with a client about this. She had an allergic reaction to a medication, and she ended up, getting sick. And I was like, how cool that your body knew. It was like, we do not like this. Go away.
It's so true. Oh, and I love that difference too. Yeah, like your body's there to support you always. Like it's always you're like cheering you on, like, I got you, I support you.
Or we need to slow down. Like, I know you think you can do this, but you need to take a break.
Yeah. So let's back it up and tell us maybe a little bit about how you got to wanting to work within body image and what was your trajectory with food and body?
Absolutely. So I always share this because obviously this podcast is being listened to. So if you don't know me, I live life in a larger body. And so with that, I have had a journey with my own relationship with body and body image. And to give you like a brief definition of body image and one that I use now, is that body image is actually four aspects. It's not just the way that you see yourself, but it's also the way that you feel about the way that you look. It's the way that the thoughts and beliefs you feel about your body. And it's also the things that you do in relation to the way that you look. So it's a really nuanced belief system. It's not just as, you know, simplistic as, you know, I like the way that I look. And so I have lived life in a larger body. And for as long as I could remember, probably starting as young as 9, I was dieting, right? And I was trying to manipulate my body size. And I had a full life of really trying to maneuver through making peace with my body. I wanted body love, right? And the only way that was attainable for me was through changing my body. Like, I'll love my body when it's smaller. And I didn't realize, right, so that those belief systems, right, those core beliefs that were there also included others will love me more when I am in a smaller body, that mm-hmm. I will be more desirable in a smaller body. And so these were core beliefs and messages that played over and over again in my, you know, my psyche until I got to graduate school. And I mean, long journey, go find, you know, me on Instagram. I talk all about my story. But so the turning point for me was when I was in therapy and my therapist, I was in graduate school and she was, you know, I was doing some crazy diet or whatever. And I said, well, you know, I don't want to lose weight. I just want to be healthy. And she said, great. Can you tell me what does health mean? And I said, well, I guess for me, health is I want to eat vegetables and exercise daily, and I want to feel not crazy with food. And she goes, oh, so then you're healthy. And I was like, no. I also need to be thin. And it was a very long trajectory from there. So it was about 2013 that I had this journey of trying to figure out why does health correlate to my body size, and realizing that health became the new desire for me, despite like physical health or physical thinness, rather, was the most important thing to me. And so having to undo those messages that had been there my entire life, undoing those core beliefs of what I believed that a smaller body was going to offer me, and living in constant defiance of what society deems as healthy or appropriate. So sort of being a rebel in the arena of body image.
Yeah, for sure. And for you, when it, like at 9 years old, like that is so young. Like you can just picture like your baby self at 9 years old, you know, like and having these thoughts. Was it something like an event that happened that you're like, okay, now I need to change my body, or my body's not adequate, or something that you heard? It was just kind of like, that's the thing that we do. And that's just normalized.
Yeah. So for me, it was an incident at my doctor's office. I was 8 years old and I remember I had gotten a physical, and in retrospect, there wasn't a lot of conversation as to how to, like what to expect when going for a physical. And so I didn't know that I was going to get naked. I didn't know that they were going to weigh me. There's just a lot of things that I wasn't prepared for because I'd only ever gotten to the doctor when I was sick. I just didn't know. And so there, I remember feeling naked. I cannot remember if I still was, but I remember my doctor saying to me, you know, she took her little chart and she was like, this is where you are. And this is all the way where you're supposed to be. And she said to my mom, she's too fat. She needs to eat better and exercise more. And she looked at me and she said, you need to eat more vegetables and fruits and exercise and not reward yourself with dessert. And I remember thinking, like, she doesn't know that I'm on the soccer team and the dance team. She doesn't know that I'm, I was into theater. So every week and weekend I was busy doing, like, I was on stage. Like, I wasn't just sitting and eating all day. And I really liked vegetables and I really wasn't a big dessert kid. And there was just things that I was like, well, that's weird. But I was also very much a people pleaser. So I was like, I want to make her proud. And so I went home and I remember I was taking a bath and I remember praying to God that he would do two things. He would clean my room and that he would make me thin, to which he did neither of those two things. But just to show the innocence of my age, of really just not understanding that even at such a young age, I believed that my body was something that needed to be changed.
And that is so painful, like, looking back too, of like, definitely like led you up to like years and years and years of that quest of, okay, now we need to change it. And once my body's different, then everything else will fall into place, right? That like false hope that diet culture gives us.
Yeah. Yes.
And then it turns into health of like, oh, but now I'm not doing it to lose weight. Now it's all about health. And it's like diet culture, like hiding behind these like healthism of like, this is what we need. We all need to be super healthy. And that's all what we want. When
it's such a sneaky way to hide, right? Mm-hmm. It's such a sneaky way to be like, okay, but at the end of the day, what is health, right? Is it just what we're eating and what our body looks like? Or is it so much more nuanced than that? Is it also our mental health? Is it also our socioeconomic status? Is it also knowing that I have a stable job, that I'm going to be able to pay my bills? Like, there's sleep is something that we as a nation, I don't know about for you guys, but in the US, we are all about the grind, right? We work the 9 to 5, you work hard in the week, and then you collapse on the weekends. And it's a tragedy to me that people in our country have to pick between their mental health and putting food on the table. So I think that our conversation on health, how convenient that we can be so easily distracted to believe that it's really just about the size pants we're wearing.
Oh, 100%. That health is so much more than that. And it's also like a privilege to be able to hyper-focus on these things too, right? Of like, there's so many other aspects to life, and then we tend to hyper-focus. And then it goes to like, it's also a choice, right? Like, it's not the end all be all that we all need to strive to be this perfect picture of health. Like, that's not life, and it doesn't have to be.
And also, health is a value. Right? Like, health does not warrant me being treated with respect by people.
I love that.
Right? And we make it almost like a marker. And I think of, you know, I won't say her name because I don't want to give her any more, you know, credit than is due. But there is a very well-known diet industry culprit who recently was talking about health at every size, or intuitive eating, and disarming why it's not effective and doesn't work. And it's like, sure, you know, but if your whole life has been about belittling people and making them feel like something needs to change, I get how scary it would be to even consider, oh yeah, you know what? Like, maybe there's a different way. Because my BMI, my A1C, my health markers aren't a qualification for me to be treated with respect. And those things, quite frankly, don't impact you. So if they don't impact you, you don't have an opinion on them.
Yeah, or you shouldn't.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Keep them to yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So then from your own journey, and then when you saw your therapist and she kind of challenged that notion around health and like why it had to be thin and what was the correlation with these two, like how did that then evolve to you being like, cool, now I want to work with people like, well, healing my own body image or working on my own body image and working with people to do that as well.
Sure. And I love this because I don't often get asked this question, because when my therapist asked that question, it wasn't like, oh, I realize this. Thank you for enlightening me. Yeah. It was actually like, no, you're wrong and I need to be thin. And she was like, just help me to understand why. And I was like, I don't understand why you're fighting me on this. I got very defensive. Because, yeah. And I say this often, a colleague of mine had said this, when people get defensive, we have to look at what they're defending. And so for me, I was defending my entire life, choices of, if not, then all this was for naught. And that I couldn't even fathom that there was another way to achieve quote unquote health. And so I reckoned with myself after leaving and doing some self-exploration and coming back and talking to my therapist. I said, I realized that I am so hopeless in this area of body image that I actually don't believe it's going to get better. And so she's like, I would diagnose you with depression in this area of your life, right? Because you're able to separate it out. So it's not in your everyday functioning, but when it comes to body image, it's the one thing that can keep you down, which now I'm more familiar is called body dysmorphia, right? When there is this hopelessness and you believe what you see is not what other people see, or that it disqualifies you. And so I simultaneously was doing an internship for my graduate school at an eating disorder clinic. And I remember being forced to deal with my cognitive dissonance of, I'm going through these body image struggles and they're going through these body image struggles, but because I'm in a larger body, what's considered health in me is considered an eating disorder in them. And so there was this moment of like, well, so the why is it not okay for them to diet, but it's okay for me to diet? And so I really had this struggle of like, I don't understand. And I remember even talking to, you know, people at the clinic of like the professionals. And I'm like, my clients want to work on body image, right? How do I do that? And I would get told this line of, body image is the last piece to come. Body image will come, but it's at the end. And now that makes me enraged, because that's mm-hmm. not true. Because body image will never come unless you invite it in.
Ooh, yeah. I like that.
It's unfortunate, but it has been silenced for so long that our relationship with our body, like our bodies don't even know we have a right to acknowledge this, or this feels so uncomfortable, this feels so shameful, this feels so whatever, that we can just make space without trying to fix it, to just begin to acknowledge, yeah, this is what I'm feeling around my body. And that is how my work started, was because I realized nobody was doing that. Nobody was laying the groundwork for grief work around body image.
And what do you mean by, we'll get into the body grieving, like what does that mean, grieving our bodies?
Yeah. So when you look up I'm a words person. I studied English in college, and I love reading and writing. And when you look up the definition of grief, it says that it means deep sorrow. And when you look at the definition of deep sorrow, it means deep distress. Distress that can be caused by something or someone. my body caused me such distress in my daily life that I didn't realize how much it actually impacted. It stopped me from being in photos and taking pictures. It stopped me from trying out for things because I was afraid of how my body would look. It made me not want to date because I was afraid that my body would be disqualified, that nobody would find me attractive or desirable because of my body. And so when I realized that my larger body was the thing that made me feel like I was missing out and that I would never put that expectation on anyone else, I realized maybe my body isn't the problem. Maybe it's my belief systems around my body. And so I had to just hold space for that. And what do I say? What do I mean when holding space? When we feel discomfort in any sense of the word, we look to fix it. It's a snap. I have a headache. Let me take some Advil. Mm-hmm. I'm in pain. Like, let me not be in discomfort. And so rather than fixing it, which would have been, let me change my body size, I said, let me lean into it. And it sucks. Like, there's just no silver lining that makes body grief feel better. But when you allow yourself to grieve and be sad, sometimes the worst part is fearing what the underbelly of the beast is how deep, how dark is it down there? And when you do it, when you see it and you get down there, and then you're able to come back up, you realize that sucked, but that wasn't as bad as I was anticipating. So it's almost the fear of exploring that body grief that is harder than the grief itself.
Yeah. Oh, that's so powerful. And it makes so much sense, right? Like, as humans, like, we hate discomfort in any way.
Of course.
So it feels uncomfortable when we feel uncomfortable in our body, and then to explore the why and like the deep rooted beliefs, it's hard work and it's uncomfortable. So it, like what you're saying makes so much sense of just like, ooh. But when you learn to be in the discomfort and be like, and I can be here and I got me and it's okay.
Yeah.
Oof, such relief.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's so cool that from your experience that you're now able to help so many people. And I love the fact that you're saying like, it's not an easy thing and it's not like a quick fix of like, oh, once you learn that it's about beliefs, like it's an easy way out. And then you're just like healed for life.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Because I find like often body image work now, or like the way people talk about body image, and we talked a little bit about this too, is just like, oh, just love your body. Like, and like, this is so easy. Go from hating your body and love your body. And there's like, there's a lot of steps in between that. Sure. And there.
And it's also that maybe body love isn't the goal for everyone. Right. But I also think too, body love is a byproduct, right? It's not a destination. Mm-hmm. It's right. How do we love people? It's out of time and connection and mutual respect and getting to know them and understanding them and empathizing with them, right? That's how we love. It's not, I'm not going to shame myself into body love, and you're not going to shame yourself out of body hate. And so there's only one way out, and it's through neutrality. It's through, I need to figure out how to speak kinder to my body so as to not fall into this trap of body hate versus body love.
I like that. Yeah. I can be uncomfortable and I can also take care of my body and I can do all these things and just stay in that zone of, you can be in the suck and we don't want to pass over it.
Yeah.
And your body deserves the kindness too.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Right. And I think one of the biggest things people will say to me is like, I'm not that mean to myself. And I used to say that too. And I think I think that our body hate is so hidden because it's so socially acceptable. Mm-hmm. That Lizzo actually said this. I forgot where she was saying it. I think it was on the Trevor Noah show. She was like, it's so crazy to me that body love is so unheard of because mm-hmm. body hate is the expectation.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, that is so true.
Yeah. And it makes so much sense when you think of diet culture, because if we loved ourselves and our bodies and accepted our bodies, they would go out of business. They wouldn't be able to have a $72 billion industry because we wouldn't be reaching for something else. Like, they create this problem around our bodies, that our bodies are inadequate, mm-hmm. not valuable if they're not thinner, and all these things that we just want to feel connected and valued. So we'll keep pushing towards that.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is diet culture creating the problem around our body.
Yeah.
So it makes so much sense that, like, the society keeps promoting this disordered way of seeing our body, seeing yourself, seeing food, because it keeps us stuck and keeps us in the cycle.
I always ask myself when I have a body image discomfort or a body image thought, and my go-to is like, well, if my body was smaller, I ask myself, who profits from that? Who profits from that belief system? Because I don't profit from it. But the diet culture industry does not profit from, hey, you know what? Body discomfort is normal. You are doing the best you can, that you're an incredible human being, and your body is not here to be an ornament to be looked at.
Mm.
They don't profit from that.
Mm-hmm.
I profit from that.
Yeah, 100%. So I feel like in my head, and I may be wrong, so 100% correct me. I almost see it as a two-part, well, it's more in two parts, but I try to see in two parts of, we have our work to do with ourselves and our body, and like allowing the discomfort and a lot of the internalized beliefs that we have around bodies. But then we have to take this work and go into the world, and the world tends to be very fat phobic. So what would you say to listeners around like doing your work, but then also like managing expectations of society and like living in the world, but still protecting maybe ourselves?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. So break that down. And first, having to do the work yourself, right? Mm-hmm. You're not going to be able to go out into the world and talk about this if you are still stuck with your own fat phobic beliefs, right? And so even when I started this journey, I was like, I really like this, but right, what about, right? Like the biggest question people have is, you know, I'm all for loving yourself at any size, but what if somebody's really sick and really needs to lose weight? And so I would urge them to say, okay, well, what if we took weight out of the equation, right? What if it was not just about weight and it was about their actual health habits? I know for reference, a lot of people think of, you know, the show, My 600-Pound Life. I don't know if you guys you get that.
Yeah.
And
it's
so problematic for so many reasons. But as an eating disorder professional, I would argue that many of those people on the show have an eating disorder. And there is no eating disorder that should be treated with starvation or restriction.
100%.
So that's a problem in and of itself, that it's not actually about helping these people. It's about making them smaller for a TV program. Mm-hmm. That's it. And two, I would argue that the science that we have says that it is far more dangerous to be a few pounds, quote unquote, overweight than even 5 pounds underweight. So where's the show for that? Where is the television show for those who are battling an eating disorder? We know the harm that a weight-centered approach takes, right? The world is not awake to it yet. And so I always say to myself, it's not my job to convince everyone. It's not, because I just don't have enough energy. So all I do is I need to set up parameters to protect me and myself and what I'm capable of. And then with that, when I go out into the world that is very fat phobic, the one thing that was really helpful, I used this with a client once. So the client was pretty out there, and with permission, I'm allowed to share the story. And so, you know, she really struggled with body image. and making peace with her body. And she was also gay. And there was this fear that, like, she was like, I have no shame in being gay, but I am afraid that partners might not want to be with me. And I said, how do we get that same confidence, that same tenacity of, I don't care if people, like, people know that I'm gay. How do we get that around body image? How do we get that around your body? Mm-hmm. Because the reason you don't care if people say bad things about you or believe certain things about you is because of your own belief system. So how do we make, it starts with you. We have to figure out how to make yourself go through your own fatphobic beliefs, stand them up against, you know, time and will they last? And not just last, but what about other people, right? Do you hold other people to the standard or is it just you? Mm-hmm. And really work through that. And then when you're able to work through that, it still sucks when people are rude and mean. I will acknowledge, I'll be the first to acknowledge. A troll every now and then on my, you know, on my Instagram page sucks, but it doesn't steal my joy. And the reason is because I know what I believe and I know who I am and I'm assured in that. And no troll is going to be able to take that from me.
I love that so much. So doing your own work so you feel, even confidence is not the word I want to use, but that you do your own work so you know that your body is not the issue. So when you do show up in the world, you can bring that along with you, right? And I think there's a two part to this that I would probably add is the, like when you give the example of like being gay versus body, there's something around our body that we feel like we can't change it. If only we were disciplined enough, then it would work. Or if only I did X, Y, and Z, then it would work. So we have this ownership that we are able to, right? Where the truth is that we're not.
Right. And right? And the argument could be made that people said the same thing about sexuality. Mm-hmm. Right? Oh, is that true. It's something that we can control and we can change. And science and, you know, lived experience proves otherwise. And so mm-hmm. how many of us are going to look back and think, wow, like I really thought I could control my weight. Like I really, really believed, you know, because, you know, Karen down the street was able to do it and keep it off, that so was I, and that it was a lack mm-hmm. of my willpower.
Yeah. Oh, I can't wait for that day. But I remember like being in dietetic school, like I was convinced of that too. And when I first met the first anti-diet dietitian I met, she's like, raise your hand if you feel like we get to control our weight. And I was like, hell yeah. Like, obviously, like that's what I've been drilled into my head for 4 years. And then like the way she explained it, you're like, fuck. But now all of us like have learned these things, right? And these messages, and you're just like, it's so harmful.
Yeah.
So harmful.
I just want to take a moment to, for any provider listening to this, that if you've been there, if you've been the one selling the, you know, the weight loss, just have grace with yourself. Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, take after, you know, Maya Angelou's quote, that when we know better, we do better. And that if this is all you've been taught, it's like a cult mentality. Mm-hmm. You've come out of the cult. You're going to do better now, but you didn't know what you were doing then. And there's a reason you were doing it. Mm-hmm. Right. I don't think anybody goes into dietetics, right. Or any field in that realm without being maybe an ignorant bliss of their own thoughts and feelings around food. Mm-hmm. Right. And Christy Harrison talks about this a lot of like, she went into it because she was thinking about food all the time. Right. Yeah. But how beautiful that your beliefs have changed and that they were capable of change.
Yeah, no, and that's so true. And I think like dietetics has like the highest rate of eating disorders of all programs, which makes sense because, you know, we get obsessed around food and bodies and things like that.
Sure.
But I think also like 99.9% of us will start, even like, you know, therapists, dietitians, doctors,
it's hard to start an anti-diet place or a weight inclusive place because we grew up in diet culture and then we're taught through school diet culture and everything like that. But I love that part of giving yourself compassion.
Yeah. And maybe anti-diet is a hard place to start, but that's the same thing of like pro diet, anti-diet. There's a lot of steps in between.
Oh yeah. 100%. So now I have a question for you of people who may say something along the lines of, I'm all for like body image work. I'll get there, but like, I still want to lose weight. I still, like, I get it. Like, I will feel confident, but also, like, for my body, I probably still need to lose weight. How would you respond to that?
So the first thing I would say is thank you so much for sharing that with me. And I really appreciate your honesty and your vulnerability in that. And I wonder if it would be okay if I ask you a challenging question. And then with permission, my pushback would be, how do you know that your body needs to lose weight? What evidence do you have that it needs to lose weight to feel better? Right? And this can go a couple of ways. I've had clients say to me, because I know that when I was in a smaller body, I felt better. Right? So if they say that, something I might ask is, was everything really copacetic when your body was that smaller size, right? There was no issues. It was just all sunshine and roses and greatness. There was nothing negative from that time. And the truth is we remember with rose-colored glasses, right? We remember all the praise that we got. We remember maybe having more energy or, you know, pooping. And what I always joke about is that I'm like, people are probably doing things they don't normally do, like sleep and exercise and eat vegetables. And their body's like, oh, we like this. But they're doing it in a way that's restrictive and that is not sustainable. Because even right movement, if you're only moving your body to manipulate your size, that's not a relationship with movement. That's punishment. Right. And so, I really just kind of try to get people to acknowledge that it wasn't truly copacetic. It was not, because if it was, you'd still be there, right? That there was a cost to being there, and we forget that. What are some other like responses that people will give you, like of, I know I need to lose weight because...
Yeah, it's typically around like the confidence piece. Like I can't feel confident in this body, or the I used to be this size and it felt better, or I can no longer shop in normal quote unquote or common stores, and those types of things of like the accessibility. Or one that I get often too is my doctor will always say that I'm unhealthy, or my doctor tells me that I need to be. Yeah.
So with that, so the way I would answer the normal clothes, right? That's fat phobic. That's in an inherently fat phobic, right? So in the US, I want to say 63%. I could be wrong on that number. Maybe 63 or 68% of women wear a size US 16, 14 or 16 or higher. That is more than half, right? So if we're
just to explain, 14, 16, is that, where is that on our charts?
That's considered plus size. That's considered, for us, that's considered a small fat, right? So with more, right?
I've never heard that term before.
Oh, no? Yeah. People will, I say identify however you want, but people will break up small fat, mid fat, and infinity fat. Okay. So I would identify as a mid fat. Just based off of that. But so if a majority of the United States women wear plus size, wouldn't you argue that that is the normal size? Who or what profits from exclusionary stores or from, why is there a plus size? Why isn't there just sizes? Why do we deem that well, if you're higher than this size, you don't, you know, like, oh, you don't need clothes. I'm currently wearing a sweatshirt. You know how like girls are like, oh, I want to just get a big oversized sweater. In order to get a big oversized sweater, I had to search high and low to find a size that would fit me. And that's not even my actual size. So how damaging is that to people to believe you don't belong? We don't make clothes for you. So, you know, if somebody were to say, oh, well, you know, I just want to fit into normal clothes, I would gently call in of, you know, I understand that. I can understand why that would be a struggle for you. What I'm wondering is, though, is who determines what clothes size is normal? Did you come up with that? Who deemed that? And has it always been this way? Because if you look at the trajectory, especially in the United States, of fashion, right? It used to be fashionable to be bigger. It stopped being fashionable. And so therefore, the industry changed and the desire has changed. And so the clothing has changed. And thus, again, right, it's someone profits off of this idea.
And trying to shrink your body to fit in different clothes is not the way to go.
You can, right? You have the right to body autonomy, but at what cost? There's a cost. There's a there's a consequence for every decision we make, whether it be positive or negative, right? There's an outcome. And so, especially when I find people who are like, I don't want to give up my clothes and buy new clothes because I don't have the money for that. And I'm like, I understand that. I understand that greatly. But imagine you had old shoes, right? And you're like, I don't want to get new shoes because I don't have the money for new shoes. You can continue to wear shoes that are too small for you, but then you're going to be in discomfort constantly. And if you know, if you can find a way, you don't need 100 outfits, right? You just have a couple that, you know, fit this current body that make you not hyper-focus on the discomfort and the distress you're feeling. How would that change your daily conversation with yourself? And there again is grief of being sad about not being able to fit into clothes. It's okay. It's okay to be sad. It doesn't mean that we have to quote unquote fix it.
I love that so much. So what would you say to your younger self, or maybe to listeners who are in larger bodies, who are feeling discomfort? Like, what would be your, maybe one advice or one saying that you could leave them with?
Oh, if I could tell younger Brie what I know now, it would be that nothing is as it seems. Nothing is as it seems. I would implore her to look at how she loves others and the way that she loves and cares for them. Is it conditional based on their size, or is it unconditional based off of their character and who they are, and how she could learn to love herself in the same way for not being ornamental, that she was not put on this earth to be looked at, that she was meant for a greater purpose, and that she might not be everyone's cup of tea, but that doesn't mean she's not going to be anyone's cup of tea. I literally have a post-it note that I've had to write out to remind myself that I am not for everyone. I am not for everyone, and I am loved. Because I need that reminder that, yeah, this message that I speak about is not going to be for everyone, and people are going to have problems with it. And it sucks. There's no fixing that. It just sucks. Especially as a people pleaser, recovering people pleaser, and the everybody friend. I want to be everybody's friend. But at the same time, those who love me, they love me dearly. And not because of what I offer them or what I do for them, but because of who I am.
I love that so much. It's so funny. I have a poster on my wall that says, I am awesome, but not for everybody.
Ooh, that's good. That's so good. I need that.
But it's so true, right? Like, like our need to connect and wanting to be loved by, or loved, or just, you know, valued by other people as well. But I love that. I love, love that. Awesome. So thank you so much for your time. This was such a great conversation. Why don't you tell us just a little bit more of like what you're up to now and how can people find you and work with you?
Absolutely. So depending on whenever this airs, it's being recorded in September of 2020. So currently my offers are that I am amidst a Body Grievers launch. So I host a group for people who are struggling to make peace with their body and they feel alone in that. And the heart behind that is to just find other body grievers who don't want to diet, but yet don't still feel like they belong in the body positive space. So just making space for the suck. And I plan to launch that again in 2021, but I'm currently in its last launch for 2020. I also have a program for professionals to do body image supervision for those who want to continue to have these nuanced conversations around body image, especially for clients who they may have that are struggling with body image and how to help them. So an opportunity to pick my brain and just gain support in our body image work. As it is not, there is no, I don't know a program that I'm like, oh yeah, this is a great one. Mm-hmm. And then I have my podcast, which is free. And I have my Instagram, which is also free 99. And I'm on way too much. And I love hanging out with people and just chatting and talking all things body image.
That is so awesome. So I will post all the link in the show notes. People can go follow you, find you. You provide so much value all the time. Like thank it's you. Nonstop. I'm like, oh my goodness. Like when I open Instagram, I'm like, look, Brie. Like, so much value. Which
thank
is
you
awesome.
So much. I appreciate that.
No, of course. So let's finish with some fun questions.
Let's
my
do
first
it.
One is my favorite question. What is your favorite food?
Okay, do I have to pick like one?
Just favorite? One.
Oh my gosh. All right. If like I had to, it probably would be a cinnamon raisin bagel with cream cheese.
Oh,
yeah.
I cannot do raisin in my bagels.
Oh.
I know. You lose me with the raisin. I'll do cinnamon.
I know. And I get a lot of hate for it because one of my favorite bagels is a cinnamon raisin bagel, cream cheese with sliced lox. And I'm like, don't knock till you try it. It is that salty sweet combo. It's my favorite. I don't even like birthday cake. So on my birthday, I make sure that I get a birthday bagel and then I'll put like a candle in it. It's my favorite thing. I'm not even joking to you.
I love that favorite thing. So much. Oh goodness. Okay. If you had one superpower, what would it be?
Superpower. Man, I mean, obviously if I had a superpower, it would be to heal everybody of body image, but in a more fun sense, I think that if I could have a superpower, I would like to teleport because there are so many times where I'm like, oh, I just want to be here. And it just is going to take time. And I am not always a patient person. So yeah, I'd like to just be able to like apparate and be like wherever I want.
Yeah, well, especially in COVID times, to just be like, let me go on a beach, like an isolated beach exactly. by myself.
Exactly.
Oh, that would be so good.
I agree.
Yeah. What is your favorite type of self-care?
Ooh, so self-care is a struggle bus for, I'm sure, many of us. And so even just learning how to like love and self-parent myself. I would say nature, being in nature. Mm-hmm. So even just yesterday, I drank my cup of coffee outside on the front steps. That's my favorite way to just ground myself and connect to myself is nature and coffee, which I would have also said is my favorite, but I wasn't allowed to.
You're like, you made me pick one.
Only one.
Oh, goodness. Oh, I love that. Okay. And my last question for you, because it's the Balanced Dietitian podcast, what does balance mean to you?
That's a great question. So I think if I had to come up with a definition of balance, it is an equilibrium, right? Like there's not like something that's taking more attention than the other. So I think of even with health, right? I think people often think balance is like, I eat more of this and less of this. And for me, it's, there is no struggle, and it's just easy. It's just the chips fall where they may. And every part of me is getting its needs met, my emotional, social, relational, interpersonal, physical, all of my needs are just, they're just in equilibrium.
I love that so, so much. That is awesome. Well, thank you again so, so much for your time. This was such a great conversation, and I'm sure it's going to help plant seeds in some people's minds to just kind of start understanding a little bit more their own relationship with their body, and then they can go follow you to get a little bit more of your genius. I know you don't say genius, but I think you're genius, so more of your genius.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Wasn't that episode just awesome? I love Brianna so much. She is such a great person, and her everything she says is genius. I hope that you too enjoyed this episode and that you could relate or learn something when it comes to our body image. It's so funny, you know, growing up in our society and in diet culture, the way we see our bodies and the way we feel like our bodies should be. And when we start doing the healing work, how much that perspective just expands of what our body actually does not need to be, does not need to do, and allowing your body to just be. Body image is probably one of the, I don't know if I'd say the most difficult part when it comes to the healing process, you know, with food and with our bodies. And I think the group participant program would definitely agree that body image is, it's hard work, right? Healing our body image, letting go of these beliefs that we've had around our bodies is just very difficult. If that is something that you struggle with, or, you know, you are in the process of healing your relationship with food in your body, or maybe just really interested in starting this journey, you can now join the waitlist for the online program. So the waitlist is available in the show notes. So you can go to thebalancedietitian.com/waitlist, where you will get all the information about the program. And you're also going to get a nice holiday discount. So if this is something that interests you, if you're interested in doing the work, being part of a community, and having access to these amazing guest speakers, definitely join the waitlist. No purchase obligation, get information, and see if this could be something that helps you. On that note, my friends, I hope you have a wonderful day. I hope you give your body gratitude today, and I'll talk to you in the next episode.